fun tournament. Excellent final. It's a little bit unfortunate what happened with the over the glass. Who knows if Russia would have scored or not. But I would like to see IIHF somehow tweak that rule to just word it better, because and I think it was you who right on the broadcast, you're like, well, that puck's clearly out of play before it hit the camera, right? Like that should have been a delay of game penalty.
I don't know how they screwed it up, to be honest with you. It was clearly out of play. It was clearly over the glass. The camera is mounted behind the glass, because I asked our producer on the air, I said, that camera's behind the glass, right? He said, it's mounted on purpose behind the glass. So I believe the ruling was, they said, it's part, the camera's part of the glass.
Yeah.
So just think of how they made that up, guaranteed. Because just think of this. Guy, a defenseman clears it out. It hits the camera. It bounces into the middle of the ice, and a guy gets a breakaway. You mean that's in play?
Yeah, fair point.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Like, it was honestly, it was a shame, because if you flip that around and – you know, Canada was trailing and they were on the power play and Russia flipped it and it hit the camera, we would have gone, our country would have gone crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have to have the same empathy for the Russians. I was most surprised that they didn't flip a screw over that. I guess they still had the power play, but I thought they would have been way more angry or outwardly angry about it.
Ray, when you look at the tournament, you've done a number of tournaments now, and it seems like Canada was pretty in control of how they were playing, other than that one Russian game that really got away from them. Was this a pretty steady group you felt watching and covering them over the course of that gold medal run?
Yeah, almost as consistent as any Canadian group I can remember. They had Lafreniere, and he's a star. I mean, that kid is fantastic. And Hayton was very good. Cousins was very good. But I wouldn't say they have, like, dominant players on that team. Now, every team that, you know, I've done nine of them now. Every team that wins that tournament goes through some crazy adversity in the tournament. For Canada, they get their rear ends kicked, 6-0, but also they got shoved around pretty good in the loss to Russia. Lafreniere gets hurt. It looked like the tournament could easily have sprung away from them there, but I thought, like, the coaches, they did a really good job of refocusing their team. They had two very winnable games. Germany was the next game, and then the Czechs. And it wasn't that they won them. It was that how they won them. They played really solidly, really simply. Like, I really liked their game. So consistency, goaltending, really solid, unspectacular defensive play. Like they played a really secure game. I like the way they went about it.
Talking with Raffaro, breaking down the world of sports, or I should say hockey, and right now we'll turn attention to NHL. And, you know, the Oilers are getting ready to take on the Habs here shortly, next couple of days. And, you know, the Habs have really had a tough go. I don't know what it is, 6-7 losses in a row. And, you know, we've all been on teams that struggle like that. But when you look at the number of injuries and some of the quality players are out, how do you kind of, you know, as a GM, say, well, guys, like, it's not good enough, but I kind of get it. You know, is this not predetermined that this kind of slump will happen when you're missing a Drouin, Gallagher, and Paul Byron or something?
Oh, yeah, and you can add Armia to it, too.
Sure, yeah, of course.
Who's had a terrific year. You lose four of your top nine forwards, you don't have a chance. But the only chance is that you have McDavid and that he might be able to wallpaper over losing that many guys. But I'm looking around and not many teams have McDavid, right? So you're sunk. The problem Montreal has, in my opinion, is even with those guys in the lineup, they don't have a breakout score, like a one-shot score. They don't have a number one centerman. Their goalie is playing well below league average, and they're paying him $10 million a year. They're not a good team. Like, they're not a a really good team. For them to be good, they have to be healthy, and they have to have the majority of the roster playing at the peak of their performance. To me, that's too much to expect, right? It's too hard, too long a season to not have injuries or to not have dips in your play. And for Montreal, unfortunately, the injuries and the dip in the play is kind of tied together. They're playing themselves right out of the playoff, any playoff race. Like, look at them now. Like, how are they going to make up those points?
They're just not going to, right? I think it's just too hard, especially Tampa Bay's found their game. Toronto's obviously gotten better. I think Florida's a good team, so I don't see it happening. They might have to ship some guys out.
And they got all kinds of cap room, too, that they haven't used.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're gonna, I could see them maybe even trying to move some guys out, and then. But the thing is, I just don't believe overpaying in free agency is usually their way to win anyway. So they're just gonna have to be patient, and it's tough to be patient because it takes a few years for your draft picks to pan out.
They're in a bigger problem too than that as well, Jason, and that is that, you know, the two highest paid players are in their 30s, and so if you're trying to trade players to get younger, those guys are getting older at the same time. Like, you know, how are Weber and Price going to be the center price pieces of your team if you're 3 years away? Like, they're stuck. I don't know if you guys ever try to do two things at the same time. I do a lot. Never works. Like, do you ever try to look for your keys and have a conversation at the same time and you forget one or the other? I do it all the time. They're trying to build a team with young guys, but their best players are 30 years old plus. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Let's take a look now at the Edmonton Oilers specifically. And Yamamoto seems to have really brought a little bit of juice to this Oilers lineup. What do you like about him and how he's kind of complementing the other, I guess, top five players in that top two lines?
Well, I haven't seen a lot, to be honest with you, because I was over in Europe. But what I did... You know, I saw a little bit of a couple of games. The goal he scored the other night, what I liked is he got knocked on his ass right before, and he was sour. Like, he was sour. He got tossed pretty good. But he got back up, and, like, he didn't lose his head. He got back up, and he was, like, right in the play. And then I forget who passed it across the seam. It might have been Jones. And he one-timed it into the empty net on the left side. I was like, that was pretty cool, because when you get, you know, just think of Strutty, like when you'd get knocked down, how angry you are. And like you jump up and he's still in the play, like he didn't lose it. And that's all part of having a hockey IQ, right? And clearly they're, you know, tips using them at the end of games, or using them on a, you know, when they need the tail end of a penalty kill, or, you know, he seems to have trust in them. And that's pretty hard to have right away. And if the coach gives it to you right away, it's pretty easy to lose the trust because you're not ready for it. But clearly when he's been down, he's been able to work and learn to build enough confidence to be secure enough to play a more complete game at the NHL level. Like, that's all part of going to the American League. Is you have to learn the game to the point that you trust yourself to make the play at the NHL level. Nobody else can do that for you. And that's, I believe, is a really underrated part of going to the American League, is to learn to trust yourself, to have faith in yourself that you can make a play amongst all these great players.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us on his weekly chat about all things NHL. And, Ray, we're nearing the trade deadline. Well, I guess it's 6 weeks away, but it gets closer. Arizona was the first one to jump into it. Buffalo made a trade that I still don't understand, how they gave up a pick to just take $4.3 million in cap space. Obviously, their GM feels that, you know, they can make the playoffs, and maybe he's right. We'll see what happens. But, you know, the Calgary Flames have a fair amount of cap space. You know, there's a few other teams. The Pacific Division is wide open right now with five teams separated by 4 points. you look at Vancouver, they got spanked last night. It's only one game, but got beat bad. Edmonton seems to have come out of their funk. Calgary's, they can't score, which I think surprises most people. They need a scoring winger. Do you see anybody as an obvious target for the Flames in a trade?
Well, I mean, the guys that, the names that pop up immediately are Chris Kreider and Tyler Toffoli. Those are two guys I think will be dealt before the deadline. I believe you could get Andreas Athanasiou out of Detroit. He's minus 4,000 this year. He's had a terrible year, right? But he can score. He can skate. He's coming up to a RFA contract. That might be a determining factor, but he might be another guy that you could think about. You'd look into San Jose. I don't really know where would you go there. There's nobody there. Anaheim, they can't score. They're not going to trade you one of the few guys that can score. I'm just trying to think of the teams that are out of it. Would you think about Jean-Gabriel Pageau in Ottawa? He's having a career year. He's got 19 goals. He's unrestricted at the end of the year. That might be but he's a centerman. That might be a place that you would look. It's not going to be easy because the team, like Boston's going to be checking around for a scoring winger. They always are. If Montreal decides to sell, could you dig into one of their wingers? Maybe. There's not a whole bunch of them sitting there.
Yeah, there could be a fight. There's no doubt about it as you get down to where teams really want to add. This Oilers goalie duo has been, I think for the best way to say it, one has always been kind of on if the other one is having a tough stretch. Do you believe the notion, Ray, when you played, that teams play differently in front of one goalie compared to the other?
Certainly not intentionally. I generally didn't think too much about who was playing goal because I can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. What I would notice is if we had a guy back there that could really play the puck as opposed to a guy that couldn't play it at all, that would change the way you play. Like they dump it in and you got to get back there because the best he's going to do is stop it. The worst he's going to do is play it after he stops it and he's going to probably give it away. And so that would be a big change. But as far as, I don't know, no team I was on did anybody say, goalie A is in, we're going to play harder for him. That certainly never happened.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat because, it's something people like to talk about. And I had to play every shift. It was as important as my last breath. But the thing is, it's a little bit different because you're still trying to limit chances against. And I don't know if you're cheating more because maybe you're quote-unquote A goalies in rather than your B goalie. I don't remember. I mean, maybe some of the elite goal scorers. That's why I ask you. I thought maybe you would have a different feeling. But
no,
I never felt really happy.
Because I don't think anything changes. This is an obscure point. But, you ask a coach who's starting and he's like, watch the warm-up today. I played 1,258 games. I never once changed the way I played because another goalie was in as opposed to the backup goalie. Because you get a chance, you know where the goalie's weak spots are because you have that little bit of scouting. But I'm not going to come back lower because a new goalie's in or I'm going to change the way I'm going to attack the net. That doesn't happen. And in our net, it was either Noodles or Glenn Healy or it was right. What were you going to change? They're trying to stop the thing.
Right.
I just wanted them to stop it. They just wanted me to score. They didn't change the way they're playing. I hope because I was on the ice. Maybe they were a little more frightened that they weren't going to get any defensive help, but what changes? I think it's an overthink. I think it's a reach. For when people discuss it, in my mind, nobody plays to get the coach fired. I never played different in front of one goalie or the other. That didn't happen. What would change is if the other team played a completely different system, like we'd go in and play New Jersey. We had to change because of the way they played.
Yeah.
Right? They'd throw a weighted blanket on you. And so you had to change the way you played. But other than that, You are who you are. You play the system that you've been practicing and working and talking about all season. You're not changing it because one guy's a net.
Ray, before I let you go, you're one of only 90, I think it's, what, you're 91st all-time in NHL goals, so you know a thing or two about scoring goals.
Wow.
Hang on, is that up to date?
Yeah. Stamkos passed you. He's 90th. You're 91st.
Yeah, that bugger. I was hoping he'd go on a 6-year goal drought.
Well, hey, watch out, though. If Jenny Malkin's, he's 5 behind you now.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, I've already come to grips with I'm going to get passed again next week.
Yeah, well, you know what, though? After that, though, like, for you to fall out of the top 100, it's going to take quite a few years, honestly. Like, because I was looking at, you've got Malkin. He's obviously going to surpass you. And but after that, I think... Patrick Kane, of course, but like I don't know if Corey Perry's got another 30 goals in him. I really don't, and I'm not sure Zach Parise does either. Maybe he does because I've played forever with that contract. But you need 10 other guys, so you got some time. I wouldn't. You'll still be top 100.
Okay, I'm gonna hang on right to the end.
Yeah, do it. So my question to you, as a guy who's in a rare group of people who scored 400 goals, Alex Ovechkin now has 684 goals. Ridiculous. I was crunching, like, he'll probably score at least 20 more this season, right? So he'll be over 700. He's now within, let's say he ends up at 710 or whatever. Like, it with 6 more years, he's got a realistic chance to catch Gretzky, doesn't he?
My buddy John Butchergrass, about 5 years ago, you can check it out on his Twitter thing, but he went through a year-by-year projection of what Ovi can score. And none of his numbers are crazy. He's not saying like, oh, this year he's going to hit 74. And he has him breaking the 894.
Okay.
And, I don't know, but here's why I think he's going to have a real shot at it. Is that, as guys, their numbers go down as they get older because they're not fast enough and, the game gets quicker and they're not getting quicker. Ovi's game will not change very much. Like, he's still going to stand in the left circle. He's like a three-point shooter in basketball. He still gets to the net. He might not get there as much, but he'll get to the net. He's still going to weigh 230 pounds. Like, what the drop-off is going to be, I don't think is going to be so significant that all of a sudden you see a goal scorer that can't score anymore. I don't think that's the case. I think he's going to give it a real run. I really do.
Yeah.
And you know what? Whether he makes it or not, wouldn't it be cool to see like a chase like that?
Oh.
Maybe the people in Edmonton don't think so, but I think it would be amazing for the game.
Oh, I talked to Gretzky about it. He thinks it'd be awesome. He said records are made to be broken, and that's what you want. Because I was looking at like other guys, like elite scorers. Like Teemu Selanne had 48 goals when he was 36, and then he had 31 when he was 40. Shanahan had 40 when he was 36. Mike Gartner scored 35 and 32 goals when he was 37 and 38 years of age. The ageless wonder Gordie Howe had 39 and 44 when he was 39 and 40. And Phil Esposito had 38, 42, and 35 at ages 35, 36, 37. And those guys are all like this, the Howe and the Espen. Those guys are 700 goal men, which is what Ovechkin's going to be. Like, I'm with you, Ray. I don't see him suddenly going below 35 goals.
It is just astounding to think of the goal total and the consistency of his totals. If you open up his hockey DB card and you look at those 2 years back-to-back, I think he had like 31 and 34. And we all got caught up in it. Hey, is this the start of the decline? And that was just like a nap that he took.
Yeah.
Because then he went right back to 50 goals again. It's remarkable if you look at year-over-year consistency of what Ovechkin has done.
It's unreal, Ray. Unreal. As always, appreciate your time, man. We'll chat with you next Wednesday.
You betcha. You guys have a great week.